Hello to all my Attitude Era fans. It's Beautiful Anonymous. 1 hour, one phone call, no names, no holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun. And I'll get to know you, and you'll get to know me.
Hi, everybody. Chris Gethard here. Welcome to another episode of Beautiful Anonymous. Thanks to everybody who's been coming out to see my stand-up tour. I've been filming it. I've been getting to talk to some of you guys. And I tell you, other comedians, they always tell me, they're like, man, you have the nicest fan base in comedy. And I'm lucky. And that's you guys. Thanks for being such kind, supportive people. I only have dates in Chicago left. I think there's some tickets for the late show in Chicago. ChrisGeth.com. If you want to come out on October 14th, Chicago. Anyway, this week's episode, let's talk about it because it's a tough one. It's one of the tougher ones, actually, in the history of the show. Because it deals with victims, people who are unquestionably victims. I would say some of society's most put upon victims. It's a hard one, so brace yourself. And our caller is someone who works to help these people, works to help people who don't have many people looking out for them. And I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think that the caller this week is a hero. Just one of these people who lives a regular life as an average person, but qualifies as a hero. I hope you get something out of this conversation.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous. A beeping noise will indicate when you are on the show with the host.
Hello?
Hi, is this Chris?
Speaking.
Oh, no way. Oh, my gosh. Well, hello there, sir.
Hi, that feels good to have someone so happy to hear from me. That's nice. Thank you for that.
Oh, you have no idea. I've been listening since episode one and trying for since that time. So I'm like, what in the world?
That's awesome. Thanks for sticking with the show.
Oh, of course. It gives me life.
That's good. That's what I'm here for. Give people life.
Life.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just got off a 12-hour overnight shift.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I'm still really caffeinated and good, so I might drink some more water because I've had a little bit too much caffeine. But I have a job where I have to stay awake and monitor girls and check on them throughout the night, so it's not one that you can sleep on an overnight shift. You're definitely awake and doing a lot of things, so.
Wow. Because I should mention, it's 11:30 a.m. in New York. I don't know if you're on the East Coast, to be fair.
No.
You're not. So you work like... You go.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm in the Midwest.
The Midwest.
Northern West, we'll say that. Yes.
So
I do have to keep it a little... I have to
of
keep
course.
My location a little inconspicuous just because I do work... with a confidential program, so I need to keep things pretty on the DL. But I can share my stories and experiences, just can't obviously share any names or initials. But I work for a girls' residential program for girls ages 14 to 18 that have experienced or are at high risk for being sexually exploited or they've already been trafficked. So
trafficked.
That's my job. Yeah. Yeah. And I just had a, why it was an extra long shift was because we had an 8 a.m. staff meeting to go over some, sexually exploited youth training with, another program. Yeah. That's in my state. So yeah, staying up and awake for that. And yeah, almost went to bed and then I saw the tweet and I was like, oh, I gotta try. So it's pretty rad to hear your voice.
Well, yours as well. And can I just, first things first, can I say, you know, you're working with people who clearly need a safety net and need someone looking out for them. So thank you for doing a selfless thing. Thank you for doing a selfless thing on behalf of some people who probably qualify as some of the more forgotten people in this world.
You know, that's so very true. And it doesn't, yeah, I absolutely love everything about my job. Yes, it's difficult, but the amount of heart-rewarding days that I get are just innumerable to any other, you know, job that I could imagine. So it's super challenging, but oh man, the rewards are bountiful.
Before we even get into any questions or stories, is that something you learn in your training, or is that just something about you, that ability to stay positive? Because without knowing anything about the specifics of what you do, I can tell you that I could not do it. I'd be too sad.
You might be surprised. Because, you know, you have to realize that these girls are real humans, and they're just like anyone day to day, but they've just experienced so much more trauma, whether it's intergenerational or historical trauma or just, you know, even emotional trauma. But these do go a lot deeper, being physical and, you know, getting the resources that sometimes they just need to have a shelter. So, and to see what they put themselves through or what their parents or so-called boyfriend or girlfriends put them through, helping them find that they can get out of the life it's wonderful. But thank you. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it's incredible. So you're doing, like I just said, I don't want to gloss past that. It's what you're doing is incredible. You said that specifically you brought up what people's parents or boyfriend or girlfriend have done. So you're working, just because I've read a lot about it. And human trafficking, I feel like many people don't know, has become one of the biggest black markets on the globe by far, to a degree that I think the average person maybe doesn't realize. And that when I first read about it was astounding, like billions upon billions upon billions of dollars are moved in this world. It sounds like you're working more with people who have been sort of less international victims and more people whose own family lives have come apart in a way.
Yep. And, you know, I live up where there are a lot of indigenous peoples and First Nation peoples, and they are sadly seen as more exotic and they are more sought out in this rural community. And they don't have, Native Americans don't hardly have a voice as it is right now. And that's even such a small number amount that are sexually trafficked or exploited, and to help them find their voice and tell them that they are of worth is important, because not a lot of people know that. And they are out there and they are struggling and they do need the help. They need the resources, and there is not enough available for everyone. And, you know, there's a lot of numbers that they're high, but there's a lot of cases that aren't reported to you, and that's super scary. You know, and also realizing another thing that I learned today was that a lot of the numbers show that like about 90% are females that are sexually trafficked. But, and then, you know, under 10% are males or gender nonconforming, non-binary. But then it's really, those are the cases that are unreported too. So it is more so half and half when you're actually out on the ground and hearing with like the other regional navigators that do a lot of the transport of these youth to different shelters around the state, is that it is really half and half.
Wow.
So it's not just girls that you think of. You also need to think of the young males out there too.
And is that just because there's maybe, I would imagine that there's even more social stigmas that keep younger males from, there's just like a lot of masculinity issues and a lot of societal pressures that they feel, oh, I particularly need to keep this secret? Is that the root of that?
Yeah, I mean, and it's also like marketing. Like, you don't see the marketing, you don't see it on the billboard of a young man. You think of a young girl with like, you know, a dark-skinned black hand over a white girl's face, and that's totally not what it is. It can be anyone, anywhere. Anyone can be trafficked.
Yeah.
And anyone can, you know, there is no certain thing, there is no certain person or what they look like to be a trafficker as well. Like, you know, that was one of our very first trainings was, all right, go, let's go around this table. Here's some photos in front of you. who do you think are traffickers in here? And, you know, you see priests, you see grandmas, and, you know, you just go down the whole line and you realize these are all traffickers. They all look so different, but they are all doing that evil, evil thing too.
Yeah, grandmas is surprising. Priests less so in 2019. Not to make a super macabre
totally.
Joke, but as a lapsed Catholic, if you put a group of pictures in front of me and said, pick out one of these people who has some weird thing with kids going on, and one of them had a white collar on, I sadly might, my eyes might be attracted to them, sadly enough. But I definitely circled that. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm not trying to make too many jokes in this episode. This is a grim one. It's a grim one. Such a sad topic. Can I ask, is there any, I would imagine that sometimes people are just sick. Sometimes people just do not have morals that meet the standards that we expect in a civilized society. But I would have to imagine, are there also some cycles that lead to this? Like, I would imagine if you're in a family where there's poverty or drug abuse, do the warnings or the likelihood that someone might fall into this increase?
Oh yeah, most definitely. I mean, yeah, you can factor into all of those vulnerabilities, and the more likelihood that they have more of those vulnerabilities is they're up higher on the risk factor. And, yeah, it is really sad, but that's how we are taught is that these traffickers go through and they slowly pick out those who are vulnerable and who need those, that food, that money, the drugs, you know, and that's a really big one is that, you know, they first hook into getting the drugs, even if it's just a cigarette, but then finding out later that cigarette is maybe laced with heroin or meth. And
I've heard about this.
These girls are 14 and 15. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, they pose it as just cigarettes, but then it's the rest of their life that they have to fight for.
Right, right. This is a thing I have read about where traffickers will sometimes actually restrain someone and give them hard addictive drugs. Like there's stories of people actually being injected with heroin against their will to get them addicted and basically enslaved to people who can then supply that to them. It's
yep.
Crazy. Wow.
Yeah, and that's like so many, you know, I come from such a community where there wasn't much diversity, and yes, there were things going on behind the scenes that I wasn't aware of, but where I'm at now, it's so much more prevalent, and you can just see these girls wanting to find something hopeful, and I've had to learn so many different things that I never thought I'd have to learn. Like when I bring the girls to the library, like I got to watch them like so they aren't scoring H behind another bookshelf.
Jeez.
Yeah. It's just like, what in the world? But it's very real to them. And, you know, they don't get kicked out of our program if they do happen to use while they're out of our sight. They are fully monitored, but sometimes they do have passes to go home or to see family. And we don't have a punitive system because that's not going to be helpful at all in the whole cycle of their life. But yeah, it's a lot that I've had to learn. And I've only been in this field for about 11 months, but I'm fully immersed, and it is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
what a everybody listening, let's just pause and note that this person I'm in conversation with just said this is the best thing that's ever happened to me, i.e. I don't even mind saying this, you are a better contributor to society than I am, straight up. I just want you to know that. I want you to have that. I hope people tell you that every single day.
Oh, shit, Chris, man. Oh, wow. Thank you.
You're dealing with...
Sorry, Sally.
She'll be fine with this one. Dealing with some of the worst circumstances. You're protecting victims who come out of those circumstances, and you're sitting here saying it's the best thing that's ever happened to you.
I mean, I worked retail for 7 years before this, and it was all about monetizing, and it's all about consumerism. And it wasn't, you know, people would, I worked in a jewelry store, and people would complain about their luxury items, and it just ate at me. Like, this isn't what life is about. This, not at all. I don't care about that. And so to go into this world where I do get to make a difference in these girls' lives, it is the best thing that happened to me, because it did give me, it gave me that energizing factor in my life again.
Wow. Do you think back to those days? Do you think back to someone coming in being like, this diamond doesn't have all four C's, cut and clarity, and like flipping out, and now you're like, really? That's what you're worried about? Because I just met a 15-year-old whose boyfriend said he loved her and then got her hooked on meth and is now pimping her. So maybe your diamond clarity isn't worth a tantrum between adults.
Yes, it's maddening for sure. You know, those people used to make me cry because they would make me feel so low. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't help you.
Yeah, I'm sorry,
you
know, your rubies.
You're still gonna be mad at me.
I'm sorry, your rubies weren't polished to your liking.
Okay, now you're giving me flashbacks. No.
Can we just say, I hate to even laugh at all during this episode, but you have to laugh at life. You maybe three minutes ago said falling into a world where you provide social services for victims of human trafficking is the best thing that's ever happened to you. But me making a joke about rubies is giving you flashbacks. That is telling.
Yeah. No, it's very true. It is very true. It was I had a really interesting time with my jewelry store. Actually, my company ended up paying me out for therapy because of what they put me through.
What?
But that's another story. I don't want to. Yeah.
The jewelry store is paying for therapy. And then your therapist, you're on the couch, you're explaining it all, and your therapist is like, look, this is a high pressure environment. And as far as your occupation goes, we might need to find something with a little bit less tension. You're like, I think I got just the field. I think I know just the field for me.
But I'm all about the heart work. I've always been all about the heart work. Like, I've always been that person where people just like come and vent to me, and I'm all for it, and I'm all ears, and I love it. And so the fact that these girls put their trust in me and I get to help them through their day-to-day, with their schooling, with how to maintain a household. Because that's a lot of the program, too, is that we're teaching them life skills to be able to be on their own and not have to rely on anyone. Mm-hmm. And yet they can have, you know, we can help them find all those resources, but it is about the in and out of teaching these teenage girls that they can make it on their own. And they will be A-okay.
Beautiful. I have a couple questions.
Yeah.
A couple broad ones that I think are important. One, when do you more often see the situation you described, a boyfriend, a family member exploiting, or do you run into situations where, you know, you hear all these stories and some of them are very real and some of them are, you know, urban legends of like syndicates and vast underground networks. Do you see people from those as well? Because I mean, a lot of that, I feel like the international human trafficking is, I once read a book. It was really great. And it had a name that I feel like everybody would have been talking about this book. It's good. The name of it is McMafia, which I feel like misrepresents it as a less serious book than it is. But it was all about how... It was all about how like black markets have changed because we globalized the economy, so that it was really fascinating. And I'm off on a tangent. The black market used to be like some regions of the world, it was really hard to get cigarettes. So there was a whole black market for cigarettes. And then we globalized the economy. It's no longer hard to get cigarettes. But guess what? You have all these people who are used to trafficking cigarettes and making a lot of money, and they have a whole infrastructure in place. they're not going to stop trafficking. They're just going to traffic something else. And that's, those become drugs and guns and humans. And it's kind of easier to traffic humans because drugs you can find and guns you can find, but you can convince a person that they are in danger if they talk. So human trafficking, some people say, is actually the easiest one for these underground networks, these black market economies, because you can tell someone, I'm going to kill your little brother if you say a word on this plane flight, and they might stay quiet. Mm-hmm. You can't deny that it's drugs. Do you find, are you dealing with people who are more from, this is a family that fell apart due to poverty, drugs, etc., or are you seeing victims who have been, have fallen into these very, very dark underground worlds?
So I have mainly deal with the families that do break down. And, you know, I had a girl tell me, like, you know, my mom sold my brother when he was six for $1,000.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, stuff like that. And that's pretty, and that was, like, she told me that on my first week. I was like, oh, okay, then, you know, like, that, like, really brought it home to me. But, you know, we also have to, like, when the girls come to our facility, we wash all their belongings and we have to inventory everything in on their little sheet. And, you know, I have seen those girls that are randomly here from the southern part of the United States, and all they have is lingerie, just like, you know, 12 pairs of lingerie, but only one pair of shorts, one pair of jeans, one sweater, and then that's it, you know, and just, God. Or like she also had like a fancy satin robe, you know, and you could really tell that she had been through another realm of that world that most of the girls that I work with haven't experienced. But it really all depends kind of what comes through our doors for referrals. So, but there is a big enough need within this community that we can just help anyone around here. And it's still just like,
wow.
Yes, please more grant money. Because there are so many, so many endangered youth that are going through things that they should never have to go through. And yeah, like bring it back to like the whole boyfriend or girlfriend thing. And they are easier to manipulate because they are vulnerable. They want food, they want shelter, they want whatever. And, you know, it's so hard for us as counselors to, when you hear those girls defend their trafficker, and they're like, no, right. He loves me. You know, it's just like, you know, you just have to start breaking it down for them. And, you know, slowly they'll get back into the cycle of normality. And, you know, they might relapse, but we're here to help them, guide them back to that continuation of recovery.
That's so sad. But you can hear it. You can almost hear the conversation of someone going, right? Like, okay, you can come live in my house. All right, let's party all the time. Mm-hmm. And then, hey, after a few months, you know, we're tight on rent and you haven't really contributed.
Yep.
Hey, I know how we can make some cash fast. And look, we party all the time anyway. Maybe we should just think about this. And then that tumbles very quickly.
This is how you can stay here. If you want to stay here, this is how you can stay here. You know, like you're even on... one example that was given today for my training was, you know, this mom can have, say, like a 14-year-old daughter.
14.
And she can go, you know, she's... Yeah, a lot of these girls aren't up towards... Like, we have helped a girl that is in her 21st year of life, but, like, most of these girls come in when they're 14 to 16.
That gets me so mad.
Oh, yeah. And this is, I mean... And that's luckily the age that we can take them. And there aren't many resources for ages below that, which is even harder too. So, but it's still very, very real.
Do these girls, because you're describing, I mean, when you're explaining that sometimes they go to the library and you have to try to keep an eagle eye out for heroin dealers. I feel like the next question is a little silly to even ask. Do they still get to be teenagers? Do they still ever get that experience. We're going to pause right there. The question I was waiting to ask for a while because I'm very interested in the answer. I hope you are too. But we do have ads on this show. And I know sometimes on these intense calls, it's tough to break them up for ads. But it's how we bring the show to you for free. We'll be right back. Thanks again to all of our advertisers. Now let's get back to this conversation. Do they still get to be teenagers? Do they still ever get that experience?
From my perspective, no, I had a really good, I mean, I hated my teenager years, but comparatively to what these girls have, these girls aren't getting to live the life that they deserve. And, you know, we have to keep them safe. So it is part of them, you know, like we can't tell you, I can't give you the address and I won't, you know, I don't give anyone the address of these house locations because their traffickers could come and, you know, coordinate and like, you know, we run intruder drills just in case.
Really?
Some, you know, oh yeah. Oh yeah. We do. All because that's a very real threat is them finding out where they're at and taking them or, you know, they're playing the game that they go into this program, but then they're also grooming other girls in the program to go on run with them.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, so they don't. Yeah. So like the biggest thing that the girls hate is that they don't get to have their cell phones
right.
Because like, that's just such an easy connection. And we monitor all calls, you know, all their internet usage, like for anything, when they are on the computer, we have to sit right next to them, even when they're doing schoolwork, because the fear and the threat is too big. It's just not worth it. So, yeah.
Is your program, is it voluntary or are these like after police involvement, people are...
It is after police involvement.
Right, right.
It's, it can be voluntary, but most of the times it's not. Yeah, it's mostly court ordered.
Which is, I think, really encouraging in the sense of, I think in maybe prior decades, these girls would have been viewed as criminals. And it's, I think it is very good mm-hmm. to hear that they're being viewed as victims because it's absolutely what they are. I wonder what you think. In my actual neighborhood, there was like a recent, it was someone ran for Queens DA. Her name was Tiffany Caban, and she really inspired the neighborhood. It's, you know, I live in the same district that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez came from, and it's very, very politically engaged. And Caban almost won and lost by like a few dozen votes to someone from the old Queens County machine, blah, blah, blah. Point being, one of her main tent poles that she was pushing really hard that was making all these waves was that she wanted to decriminalize sex work. And I wonder if you would have an opinion on that. Because in one sense, it would mean there'd be so much less people needing to live in the shadows or people having shame held over their heads and being able to get help. In the other sense, I feel like it could be a free-for-all. It's really hard to sort out my feelings on that as someone who had to actually cast a vote thinking about it.
Yes, and that is a struggle for me too because I am very pro-sex workers, but I want to, there's a completely different, it's so different. You know, the sex workers choose and they are empowered by this, but it is not manipulation by an outside force or anything else. It's a complete detachment and I am all for sex work, but it also unfortunately does create more of a need for these underage girls too mm-hmm. that are specifically asked for in that world. And so like from a work standpoint, like work and personal is different on that view for sure. Because
right.
I see these girls, they're in my day to day, but I also have friends that are sex workers and I fully support them too in what they do. So it's
right.
kind of like, I just have to keep that separate for me as hard as it is, I guess it just, it's a completely different world. A lot of these girls, you know, they don't have developed minds at all.
Yeah, that's when you said 14 to 16, you said it a couple times and it really clicked with me of like, man, your emotional development and your view of, like, you still believe in fairy tales, you know, you still believe in fairy tale versions of love. When you're 14 years old, like, you're writing in a diary and you're dotting your I's with hearts and you're talking about boys in school and you're hoping they'll marry you and stay with you forever. Because you don't understand that when you're 14, you know, we're not living in the 1880s. Like, the majority of people are not getting married when they're 14 years old. When it happens, it's viewed as a little bit askew in modern times. And to jump, to sort of like jump into the fray and exploit girls who still have this like completely naive relationship with what love and sex are is just the height of evil, the height of evil, I think.
Yeah, and a lot of these girls have a hard time integrating into high school because what one of the people said today, she's like, a big thing, like, the girl who came to did training with us, she is more one-on-one with the girls and talks more about their trafficking experiences where, like, I'm not going to touch that situation or touch that topic unless the girl brings it up to me in the moment. Like, that's right. Completely up to them. But this advocate, you know, she's like, a big thing with these girls is that they can't mesh into high school because they don't, you know, most of their friends haven't had sex and they know their number and it's 87. And a big thing is their number that they know. So, yeah, sorry, that number is still just like, you know, for a 14 to 16 year old, it's just, you know, and girls will tell you, like, I don't even know how many guys because I was just going in and out of being comatose, of being under some kind of drug and just waking up every time she would come awake and there would be another guy. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah. And it's like, I love these girls. I can't say that, like, to them at all, but they have my heart.
Yeah.
You know, and I have to be the parent that they haven't had, so they don't usually like the staff because we're enforcing them and we're holding them to structure. But that structure, they do crave that structure ultimately. And whatever they do share with us, I mean, anyone who worked for the program that I do or any similar program that I do, you're going to have your up and down days and you are going to create a bond with each and every one of the girls, no matter how little or how long they stay. Sometimes the stay can be 2 days, like, okay, this isn't the right fit for me. Let's find another shelter. Or this is going to be my home till I'm 18. And then I'm going to go into extended foster care. Or they get adopted, you know, and I stay with them for 11 months and and you don't get to have contact with them once they leave the program. Oof. It is, you know, that's the hardest part of my job, but it is ultimately it's one of the most important things because you have to have boundaries. You have to have that safe working relationship. You can't get too personal with these girls. They can share everything personal with you, but you still have to be restrictive because we are here for them. This isn't about us. This is about them. And how can we help them through their life? So it's like, you know, I celebrated with one of my coworkers. I was like, oh, this is the first girl that I was attached to and I didn't bawl my eyes out when she left. And she's like, oh. And there are some girls just like, you know, we're just like so glad when they leave because they just aren't adhering to the program and they're just not wanting to be there. And right. If they don't want to be there and stick to the program, there's not much we can do.
Right, which is so hard too, because I would imagine that it's disruptive and it might hurt the experience of the girls who are locking in. But at the same time, you're also so aware, I'm sure, of like this, any behavioral issues, you can't blame someone who's been through all that, but it's
Mm-mm.
still, you have to get the job done.
Yep.
Are you trained? I know you hear stories a lot of times about flight attendants being trained to look for signals that trafficking is happening. Is this something that you've been, you know, trained in as well? Just because I feel like sharing that information to anyone listening for this might be really eye-opening. I'm not sure if it's something you can speak to, though.
No, I totally can. So I think, like, some of the biggest signs would be that they aren't doing the talking. They're letting the other person do the talking. They seem quiet and reserved. They will have, like, their cell phone is really important to them too, most times out on the streets and stuff and in the life. And you can see that they maybe have access to all the clothing, all the money, all the food that they want, but they still have restrictive access to their cell phone. That's a huge sign.
So if someone else in their life if they have to ask to use a phone and get it handed to them, that type of thing?
Yeah, that type of thing. And it's also, not even handed to you. Like, no, you aren't going to have it because, you know, you can call whatever number.
Right.
Simple as that. It's just
right.
On or off. I'm going to restrict you. But it's also like to the point where if you can tell, like, if they're now, this is also kind of another thing. Cause I'm all for body positivity. And you can see that some of these girls that, like, they'll take clothes and then they'll just, like, they'll cut them up and they'll make everything a little less skimpier, and that's fine. And so, you know, sometimes you have to defer between, okay, are they just really loving their body right now? Or is this, like, for another reason?
Right. Is this an advertisement?
So that's one of the signs too. Yeah, it is. And as sick as it is, they don't want to get beat up. They don't want to have their family get killed, you know, which is very real too. And I know there's a lot more, but yeah, I'm also off. I think part of my 12-hour brain.
Of course.
Off overnight.
The caffeine's wearing down. I bet at the end of most 12-hour overnight shifts, your impulse is not, I'm going to get on the phone and explain this for an hour. This thing I just went through. You probably want to go home and...
I will admit there's been a few times where I've been hoping after my overnight shift, because, like, that's the only time that I'll see your tweets come through. I'll be like, oh, I'll try. so I have thought about it. And so it's kind of like, yes, this is something that I do want people to hear, because it is such a stigmatized thing and there isn't a lot of information out there. So, I mean, please look it up. And if I could tell you what state I'm in, I would, and just give you all these resources to go look it up. But I just don't feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, so. No, we don't want to put anybody in any sort of danger zone professionally, personally. And just a follow-up question to what we were just talking about, if someone's in a situation where they're getting a sense that something's off, they're seeing a young girl and they're with someone and you're like, this doesn't seem like a family thing. This seems weird. This girl seems like she's out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're noticing some of these signs you mentioned. What should people do?
I think what you, the biggest organization and that the one of the houses is funded underneath is the Safe Harbor Grant. So I think in every single state there are navigators all around the state that can, like, hook you up to whatever services in your community or in the region, and they will give you the same kind of services that my program provides.
Right.
So Safe Harbor.
Safe Harbor.
Is what you want to Google. Yeah.
Safe Harbor. And is it recommended in the moment? Do you try to find a way to ask a young person, are you okay? Do you call 911? Or is it just do what you have to do to trust your instinct that something's wrong? Because I feel like one of the scary things and one of the sad things, especially for victims, is we are all conditioned in society, by and large, I think, to go, I better keep my mouth shut. That's none of my business. and an interaction that, you know, you might talk to someone for 10 minutes and go, something real feels really off here. And then spend, you know, a long period, many months going, I should have called the cops on that. I feel like you also don't want to put someone in more danger. I don't know if there's...
Even in our region, there are a lot of specialized task force developments with the Safe Harbor Grant and, like, working with sex trafficking victims. Mm-hmm. And it is always such a good idea to call if you see, even just you just have that weird intuition, because most likely that person might be, they can't say anything. They're still going to defend their trafficker in the moment. You know, they're not going to tell you straight up most likely. And you can put yourself in danger too, but like if you can somehow even just grab an inconspicuous photo and send it to your police department, call them immediately and kind of track their location, that would be amazing. Because I have a whole new found respect for, the detectives that work with these trafficked youth.
Yeah.
And they're in it, and they're never off. So, we've had even girls go on run, and off-duty detectives will be like, oh yeah, I heard that go over the wire. She was over in this corner. So I brought her in,
wow.
You know, and she comes in and is handcuffed and just like, oh, good to see you. And, you know, she just screams, I hope you all fucking die. And you could just see that blank face. You know, it wasn't her in that moment, but she just needed to escape, and she just had other demons that she needs to work through. And these police officers and detectives are really doing a great job. As I know, is like the whole Black Lives Matter, they need to work better on that. But from what I've seen in my community, they've really stepped up their game with trafficking and exploitation.
Please tell me you have a hobby. Like, I would love it if you were in a bocce ball league or something. What are you doing on the weekends?
I paint.
That's good.
I paint the living daylights out of my life. Yes.
Did you paint before this job? When you were in the jewelry retail world, have you always been a painter? Have you noticed? Has the tone or tenor of your paintings changed as you've entered this different world?
Can I go kind of morbid, to be honest?
Let's go ahead and pause right there. If she says, I don't want to get morbid, when we've been talking about some of the most grim stuff happening on the planet, keep your ears peeled. Is that a thing? It is now. Check out these ads. We'll be right back. Now let's finish off the conversation. Has the tone or tenor of your paintings changed as you've entered this different world?
Can I go kind of morbid, to be honest? Because I know there's a lot.
Why? why stop now? What if I was like, nah,
okay.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to go too dark with this call.
Okay, yeah, this is probably like, I don't know, not as bad. But... I had a history of truancy. I did not want to go to school when I was in high school. And I would go home, and luckily my parents were like, she only comes alive when she paints. So, you know, I worked out a thing where I could go to school to work, and I would come home and just paint for hours. And but those were, they were really dark, and I would always try to paint how I cut myself and like, mold the paint to get it all stacked up to be like just how the scars were and the color. And I'd be mad if I couldn't get it that deep of a red. I'm like, oh, it doesn't flow right.
And this was rooted in real. So you were cutting in high school, and you were trying to emulate the visuals of that in your painting?
Yeah. It was like a cry for help. Like, please, art teacher, see what I'm going through. And she did. She did. You know, in my sketchbook, she would be like, hey, if you ever need to talk, I'm here. Like, if you're going through something. So that was great for that. And now I'm just like bright colors all the time, doodle shapes. Like, it's not landscape. It's not abstract. It's all like just non-objective. And maybe some botanicals, I guess, but
lots of flowers. So flowers and shapes.
Flowers and shapes and bright colors.
Neon colors.
Oh yeah.
Light pastels. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah. And I actually just, I live, we're starting to get fall right now already. Like I can see everything. All my trees are changing colors. And it's like, okay, I got to go pack everything in for winter. But this summer, I have a little garden shed that I turned into what I call the backwoods bungalow. And now it's an old chicken coop that I turned into my painting space. And that's where I spend the time where I just need to like hash out some things in my mind or just get my mind off of work and just delve into the medium. But it's fun to be able to create after a long, hard day.
Yeah.
Actually, that's what I almost did instead of coming inside and like looking on my phone was, oh, it's actually nice outside. I should just go out and paint. Well, there's light and it's not raining.
I'm messing that one up. I'm glad you mentioned the painting first.
No, I'll get to it. Still.
If I had said like, hey, do you have any hobbies? And you were like, oh, mostly I hang out in an old chicken coop. I would have been very concerned. So I'm glad you gave us the context of the backyard bungalow first.
Oh yeah. We have like electrical cords hauling out there. I mean, I have solar lights that are going inside too. So it's a pretty sweet deal. And I even like brought out one of my old chairs that my cats tore up in the back and you can't even tell. So it's like anything in there can get messy. It's all, everything's game.
That's awesome.
And it will get paint on it.
That's good to have a backyard bungalow.
Yeah.
That's good. Now you said we, is this, I've not asked one bit about your personal life. And I feel like the reason it springs to mind too is I have to wonder if between the field you work in and the schedule you work in, if this doesn't affect one's ability I would have to imagine that sometimes this stuff gets in your head when it comes to your own personal life.
Oh yeah. You know, and that's really, yeah, I do have a husband. We've been together for 9 years. We actually met on Plenty of Fish, and it was a total, married for 3 years, and so that was another random thing. But, yeah, it is really hard. Our schedules are completely opposite. Because also another thing with the girls is that these youth counselors can't have a set schedule because for the staff that the girls like might like better, they will tend to go on run or they'll try to assault someone on the shift that maybe isn't the strongest staff. So it's a constant rotation of random schedule whenever. It's either 7 a.m. to 3 p.m., 3 p.m. to 11 p.m., or 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. So, and it, you know, you don't want, I mean, as much as I would love that structure, I like structure, it's just not good for the program. And it really does affect my husband and I because it's just like, I don't get to see him a lot. And we make a really good deal of just like at least hugging each other for like a minute each day, just like when we see each other. And then like that has really helped a lot because sometimes we'll just be in passing. Sometimes like he'll try to stay up, and be like watching wrestling when I get home at night, and you know, he's just already asleep. It's just like, oh yeah. Yes. And yeah, it is hard, but you know, it's also really nice too, because my boss is one of my closest friends too.
Oh,
and she really understands that work-life balance, and she has never judged me once for saying like, hey, I can only do 3 shifts this week, or like, I need some time off. She's totally respectful of that. And it's just like, yeah, sure. We can make it work. Like, we want you here. You need to take care of yourself. And these are important steps to take. So don't work yourself ragged, because then you won't be the best for the girls either. And my company that I work for, they do give, I mean, I've only worked there for 11 months, and they start us out at 3.5 weeks of PTO, which is completely unheard of in the world of retail. So
what's PTO?
Going from that and, oh, pay time off.
Oh, PTO. Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Being a lifelong artist, I missed that one. PTO. The idea that you get to take time off. No, you don't take time off. You just sit in your head and you dwell on your own inadequacies. You don't ever get to take time off from that. That's my life. I wish I had.
Yeah.
I wish I could have PTO. PTO sounds good. And I don't want to pry too much. I have to wonder. It sounds like your husband is a good man. It sounds like you're prioritizing maintaining that connection and the difficulty with schedule. Are there times too where you do have free time together and you're, are you able to basically separate that life? Or do you sometimes have to turn to him and go, hey, I'd love to be more engaged on this date right now, but last night I heard the worst thing I've ever heard. I'm sorry. Like, I would have to imagine that might happen.
Oh yeah. It's happened several times. Just like, there's nights that I'll come home crying and just like, I can't believe just what happened. Like, I'm still shaking and like, you know, sometimes the girls don't really want to be there and they take it out on staff. Luckily for me, it's only been verbally, but staff do get assaulted sometimes. He can totally read me too. He's like, you'll let out of it? I was like, yeah. He's like, okay, cool. And just like, doesn't need to go into more of it. Because he does deal with a lot of anxiety and depression with himself too. So that's another nice thing about having friends as coworkers too, is that they understand and you don't have to try to explain it to them. They just get it, because it's a whole nother world that it's so indescribable. Like, yes, I can do this hour-long phone call with you, but it's just the tip of the iceberg. And
yeah.
I did start to share stories with my husband. And he's like, I love what you're doing, but I just can't hear the day in and day out of your work because I can't.
Yeah.
And I totally respect that. So, yeah, we have, it's taken us some time, but we definitely can tell when one or the other is off and just kind of be like, hey, you need alone time? Or like you're going to paint tonight? Yep. And then we'll have dinner and then he'll watch wrestling or soccer and then I'll go out and paint.
Depressed, anxious wrestling fan. Me and your husband would be fast friends, huh?
I have told him that so many times. Yeah.
Sit around watching NXT, pondering the inevitability of this world's propensity to crush one's soul. And then we'll watch while watching Sami Zayn do his dive in DDT through the ropes from the outside. Anyway,
really?
Oh, go for it.
He's super into the Attitude Era. Mm-hmm. So like he's going way back to all of the old school and just like watching them from beginning to end.
So
He's got the network.
He's got the network.
Yes, he does. Yes, thank you.
There's a show, you got to let him know about this. It's a little bit buried on the network. It's called Legends of Wrestling.
Ooh.
You're going to want to let him know. Okay. I recommend Legends of Wrestling. He probably knows about it, but it's this.
I was like, it kind
of. He'll know about it, but it's this show where they just get like four or five old wrestlers and they sit around and they tell stories about the old days. And
that's what I love.
Oh, it's the best. And a lot of these guys came up in like the 70s when it was like, you're not on TV every week. You're like doing a show in Omaha, and then you got to drive overnight to Amarillo, Texas, and you're getting paid $40 for each show and sleeping in your car.
And getting beat up night after night.
Oh my God, brutalized. And these guys don't even realize how, like, they all get going and there's four or five of them and they forget that there's people watching this and they don't understand how bizarre their lifestyle is to normal humans. And
yes.
It's an amazing show. It's wild and oftentimes inappropriate. And I love it so much.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what it's all about, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I can't imagine, like, I look back on, like, the 90s and 80s. I'm like, the amount of tits and ass that they showed on television would never be allowed now. Or just
absolutely
like,
not.
The
90s, yeah, 90s like, era wrestling is like a Me Too nightmare. And wrestling is rooted historically in racism. That's another aspect of it as well. It's just like, you know, like Hulk Hogan was named Hulk Hogan because it's an Irish name. And in the New York territory, it would be like Bruno Sammartino versus Hogan. And the whole point was to try to get Italian people and Irish people to buy tickets to see which ethnic group was better. That was that was how the New York territory was. The name Pedro Morales. You'll notice the old school 70s WWE, you know, before when it was the WWWF, all the champions had ethnic names back then. And it's because it was just, can we get Ivan Putski? Can we Polish Hammer?
Also rip off his whole, like, scheme from someone else?
Superstar
too.
Billy Graham.
Yeah,
me and your husband. Does your husband have ridiculous glasses and a comically large forehead?
Yes.
He does.
Yes, he always is so mad because he's like, okay, whenever I try to take photos of her face, he's like, you're chopping off my hair.
Yeah, I do that on purpose. I do that. You guys will notice, Beautiful and Honest fans, if you follow me on Instagram to get the show rubs, you'll notice I often, especially as my hairline is, you know, we started this show in 2016. Sadly, I had more hair then, and I now craftily try to get all the pictures close up enough where my hairline and forehead are blocked by a microphone or a headset.
Yes, the artisanal crop.
Oh, yeah. They
focusing on the face.
Oh, or just like a close-up of an eye and hope people think that that's somehow like a creative choice, like I'm trying to be artsy. No, it's just that I look at pictures of my own forehead and get sad. That's what's going on with my Instagram.
Yes, you and my husband would have a lot of commonality in that as well.
Yeah. And for anybody listening right now who's going, why are they rambling about wrestling and foreheads when we've had such an intense and interesting call? This is like the last 8 minutes of the call where I reserve the right to just try to get you to laugh a few times so that I feel like I've done, because that's what I feel like the role of a comedian is. I feel like comedians are not important. I feel like there's all these think pieces. Everybody wants to talk about the importance of comedy. Comedy's not important outside of the fact that we get to give people like a good laugh. We get to give you a laugh.
Yeah.
And hardworking people and people doing good and people feeding their families, people with hard lives and people working in the service of others. I get to make you laugh. That's why I do what I do. That's the whole point.
Yeah, thank you. You do. Like, you have told me, turn me on into the podcasting realm of comedy and to stand-up comedy and to other, like the Chris Gethard show. It's just like all of these things that like open my eyes. So like you saying that comedy doesn't matter. Okay, maybe in the big scheme. Well, I don't know. I think in the big scheme of things, it does, because if everything is so heavy, that's hard. That's really not fun to live through. And if you can't laugh, I need that stimulation to laugh, because a lot of my mental thoughts just is so depressive, and it is a lot about what can I do to better serve these girls. So if I can just turn on some stand up or a comedy podcast and get my brain flowing in that way, that really does matter.
Yeah.
It does matter.
Well, it's important. It's important, but it's tangential. It's important in a support way, and it's a service industry. And comedians are forgetting that too much the past few years. It's about our ego. I don't get, no offense to anybody who's much bigger and richer than I am, but I don't ever want to do comedy in a football stadium. I want it to be in a small room where I can look you in the eye and I can find the person who looks the most tired or the most exasperated or the most just done with it, or the person who's there by themselves. And I can go, this show is for you. We are the support. We don't fly the jet. We refuel the plane. You know, we're the ones there to help the people like you. I'm inspired by you. You're doing the real work that I could never do. And I'm just glad to hear that I've given you a couple laughs along the way, because man, do you deserve them. Man, do you deserve them.
Oh, thanks.
You've been working there 11 months. Have you gotten any vacations yet? They must give you a decent vacation time, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what PTO is.
PTO is the...
And you, vacation,
When you get that PTO, are you just like, we're going all-inclusive resort, I don't want to lift a finger, I want to swim up...
No.
I want to swim up to a bar and get a strawberry daiquiri. Yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah, I wish. I also, this is a really hard time because it's towards the end of the call, but I also never graduated college because I was misdiagnosed with narcolepsy while in college. And it was actually just, so I didn't graduate college and I saw $91,000 in debt of student loans that obviously you can't declare bankruptcy with.
$91,000?
So no, yeah. So I just have to tell everyone out there, if you aren't feeling college right now, wait. There are plenty of jobs that you can do apprenticeships or like you can do, even what I can do, what I'm doing now is I can get my hours so I can actually become a mental health practitioner without going to school. I just have to put in more hours than the people that do go to school for it. Mm-hmm. But it's all attainable and there are different avenues. And another thing, sorry, just to like put on the end is if you aren't feeling like your medication is helping you, advocate for a different doctor because something probably is wrong. And for my instance, like they misdiagnosed me with narcolepsy and it was just that I was on a crap ton of allergy medicine and depression medicine. I was sleeping 18 hours a day and never going into my REM cycle. And that was unfortunately found out like as I was leaving college, but it is totally worth the whole journey of it. So beware of all those, things that a lot of pharmacists miss.
That's crazy. So you have a couple too many nips of Benadryl and now you owe the man $91,000. That's a bummer.
Yeah. And, they labeled me because of my anxiety and depression is that I just had chronic pain. So I actually had a herniated disc and the worst arthritis the doctor had seen in someone my age when I was 21. And he's like, I didn't believe you. I thought you were just making all your pain up, but actually you have all this. So that ties in with the mental health community that keep trying a different doctor because someone is going to run a test they don't think is going to come out positive and it might. And then you'll be able to have a lot more answers and move on from life.
I am with you. There's someone very, very important to me in my personal life who was on medications for a few years and then just had a new doctor who was very perceptive.
Are you there?
Yes. Hi. Are you there?
Oh, no.
Hi. Oh, no. This can't be how this call ends.
Oh.
Hello?
Oh, no. I hear you for a second.
I hear you the whole time for such a beautiful call and such a beautiful caller. This is the saddest way for this to end.
Oh, hi. Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. What just happened there?
I have no idea. I haven't moved all hours. So I'm not sure.
All right, we're going to give this one an extra minute because I just want to say a couple of things, which is one, I'm with you because someone in my personal life just switched medications and they're, oh God. Oh no.
Say whatever you want to say. I will listen to the podcast.
You'll hear this on the podcast.
Give me an extra minute.
Okay. You'll hear this on the podcast. Someone in my personal life just switched medications. It has turned their life around and I'm with you. Absolutely. Also, put this out here. Oh, weird idea. Just came up with this one off the top of my head, not patting myself on the back. Hey, maybe if people dedicate their lives to others in certain fields, we can have some sort of forgiveness program where the government covers your student debt, i.e. if you become a teacher or someone who works with trafficking victims or someone who works in public service, then maybe we can find ways to forgive $91,000 worth of debt. What are you talking about? I'm also with you that college is an extremely important thing. I have gone on record a number of times saying that I don't recommend it. My wife has gotten furious with me, especially as we have a son now, where she's like, there's about 400 examples of you on your dumb podcast and TV show saying, F college. No, we don't. Come on. But you are right, I think, that there's things like community colleges. There's things like trade schools. There's things like taking a gap year to really find out your priorities. Most of all, what I want to say on our way out the door is that I know in your day-to-day life, you probably can't think of yourself like this, but from the outside, you are a hero. You're helping victims. You're helping people who have no advantages. You're helping people whose whole lives are an uphill battle. You're doing more than most, and it's a really incredible thing, and you're a really incredible person, and I hope you do listen to the podcast and hear that part, and I hope it really rings true.
Oh, thanks, Chris. Now you're having me teary-eyed. It's been so great talking to you and hearing your perspective on what my life is. And I appreciate all that you do.
I'm so sorry that that conversation ended with the audio cutting out as I tried to pump the caller up. All of it, stuff I feel so truthfully, that caller is really doing good for the world. Caller, thank you for doing the hard work that not all of us have the emotional capacity to do. Thank you so much. Thank you to Harry Nelson in the booth holding it down. Jared O'Connell's also already off in London, gallivanting around, leaving us here holding the bag. Classic Jared. Thank you to Shell Shag for the music. If you want to know about me and when I'm out on the road, chrisgeth.com. All the tour dates are there. If you want to help the show, go to Apple Podcasts. Rate, review, subscribe. It really helps when you do. Next time on Beautiful Anonymous. As a tribute to your, a very respectful tribute to your dad, and my version of what that must sound like in a Cockney accent would be like, "Hi, everybody. Happy to be back in the pub. Check out me posh doctor." That's a Cockney accent in my mind.
Why was the end French?
Was that close or no?
I mean, it started so well, and then it just got worse from there.
You just described so many of my projects, so many of my professional endeavors. It started so well, and then just went off the rails. That's next time on Beautiful Anonymous.